Welcome to episode 172 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace. I'm here with Nick and Marty. How you going, fellas?
Going well, Jace. Going well. But I've been getting these messages over the last weekend about The Numbers Game getting a shout out from Stephen Bartlett from Diary of a CEO. What's going on? Why are we getting shouted out to the world? What is happening here? We must dig into this.
Well,
unbelievable.
I was going to cover it, you know, in what did I get up to on the weekend, but there we go. It's the secret's out. I actually was lucky enough to be invited for a VIP meet and greet with Stephen Bartlett, who's recently been in Australia for his business and life speaking tour. So for those playing at home, if you're not aware who Stephen Bartlett is, he does have a podcast called The Diary of a CEO. And before that, bunch of successful businesses in social media and other investments in things like Whoop and different investments. I won't even go into it. But yeah,
I've seen him on Dragon's Den in the UK too, which is like a Shark Tank type scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, fantastic young man. I say young man. He's just turned 31, I think. He's early 30s. It was actually the Friday that was Casey's birthday, and I got an invite to attend the business and life speaking tour, but I knew it was on Casey's birthday, so I had to, you know, do a bit of a cheeky, and I arranged to buy an extra ticket for her. I was being invited through the business club that I'm with, and I told her I'd organise a surprise for her birthday. So you can imagine that I wasn't the most popular guy when she found out that basically the surprise for her birthday was me getting to go and see a speaking presentation. But, you know, made sure that she had a nice dinner at the Atlantic. She loves likes her seafood and a few wines. So it wasn't all about me.
You recovered the evening.
I did recover. But, so back on track, went to this event, and through the meet and greet, you get to have, you know, 30 seconds to a minute with Stephen backstage. And you get to ask a question. I thought, you know what, you know, The Diary of a CEO came out about 4 years ago. It's gone bonkers. I thought, bugger it, I'll ask him a question. I said, oh, you know, what do you see as the key of growing a podcast at the moment? You know, what are some things you do? And he goes, oh, you know, long form video on YouTube, super important. So if you're not watching our YouTube channel or subscribed, go and check it out. You get to see our mugs in full length form. And he had and then he goes, actually, wait until the second half of the presentation. I think you'll get heaps out of it. And he walked over and grabbed a pen and paper, and he goes, what's the name of your podcast? I want to look it up. So writes down The Numbers Game podcast, Jason. Then I get a message on our Instagram that he'd invited us to join this channel. I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. He probably just, you know, writes it down to make me feel special. But sure enough, the presentation started, and it's like, I think it was, not to sit here and make this a plug about it, if you didn't see it, I think it was one of the best business presentations or life presentations I've ever seen. Super generous, went for nearly 3 hours. So again, some people could think of sitting there listening to some bloke talk for 3 hours. How could you do that? But the engagement, the videos, the way he tied the story together, absolutely mind-blowing. And, you know, I'll try and take you on a mini 20-minute version of that journey now, or the key takeaway, And when he brought up The Numbers Game podcast, it was actually quite interesting. You know, in business, you often get told, don't sweat the small stuff. I assume, Nick, Marty, you ever heard the saying, don't sweat the small stuff?
Yeah, you hear that a bit.
Yep. Yeah. And what's your initial thoughts on when you say don't sweat the small stuff, what do you think when somebody says that?
Well, I think they say just move forward, really, and move forward as quick as you can and course correct. That's what I think when I hear that. Yep.
Yep, Nick?
The first thing I think is it's easy enough to say that, but it's very difficult to do it because, you know, as much as we try and remind ourselves of it, every day we get caught up in the small stuff.
Yeah.
And Jace, I think the small stuff is the big stuff. That's the thing sometimes that I think. I go, you know, there's a lot of little things that if you get right can have a big impact, and that's missed a lot by business owners too.
Yeah. So I'll skip to this part and dive into it a little bit, but ultimately this presentation goes through, you know, if you're starting in business and life, he went through, how do you start? What's the start of the journey? What does growth look like? You hit maturity, and you're imagining a mountain right now. I'm doing it with my hands. So start, grow, mature. Mature, you're at the top of the mountain. Then ultimately you either come down the other side of the mountain, you quit, or you have an exit event, and then you die. So the death part I'll save to the end of this episode because it gets quite yeah, I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. I'm talking 3,000 people in tears at the end of this three-hour presentation. So you can imagine the impact it had. But I'm not sweating the small stuff. So, you know, I've heard that saying heaps. And interestingly, when he mentioned the Numbers Game podcast, this is where he went into the little details and how important they are in business. So, you know, when you think about the one percenters, he talked about, you know, and specifically thinking about the podcast, you know, the examples he had, he goes, when we have a guest on the podcast, we research that guest's favorite song. So before that guest comes into the studio, so they record live in a studio, they have the guest's favorite song or multiple songs playing in the background. So the guest comes in, all of a sudden the guest's in this mood, like, man, that's my favorite song. Like, wow, that's cool. They knew that was their favorite song. That is a deliberate one percenter to put that guest's favorite song on in the studio before they enter. Then through learning, so through learning and failures or learning and, you know, making decisions, Stephen realized that the temperature of the podcast studio was something to get right and the level of oxygen in the podcast studio. He found that when they're doing 2 or 3 hour episodes, if it's too warm or not enough oxygen, the guests can get a bit, you know, him and the guests could get a bit lethargic, a bit sleepy, a bit, you know, and he wanted to be alert and up and about. So they actually measured the amount of oxygen in the room and the temperature of the room. And again, he talks about how this is sweating the small stuff, all the little small details that will set you apart from your competitors or from somebody else that you're up against in the industry. And then beyond that, you know, it goes into the other thing that happens when you sweat the small stuff is the ability to learn from the little things that don't go right. So he talks about failure is feedback and feedback is knowledge and knowledge is power. So by sweating the small stuff and continuing to make small little 1% changes, you can't just do it and then not measure the reaction or see if it makes a difference. So he talks, you know, actually before we go on, in business, do you think about any small 1% things that you guys do that make a difference that maybe other people wouldn't think to do? Is there any example? I'll put you on the spot there with an example.
But I was just doing it before. We had a new guy starting today, Romesh, which we're excited to have on board. And I was saying the difference between, you know, transactional brokers and strategic brokers is they go that next level to show people how to use their money to advantage. And I said, yes, you can get a great rate. Most brokers can do that. But that next level really shows a sense of, you know, understanding where the client wants to go with their goals. And it's a significant difference in showing that to a client to a point where they want to operate. But just most people are just busy and they can't be bothered. But again, it's a point of difference to set yourself apart as a finance professional, not just a finance broker that's transactional. So we were actually just directly talking about that an hour ago, and that's how I think that, you know, Romesh is going to go from something like 50 million a year to 100 million a year. So it's just that next layer, which, yeah, it's just today. So there you go, Jace.
Yeah.
Sorry, I haven't said, how are you, Nick? I just jumped straight into the I was so excited that we got feedback that the Numbers Game was up there. Are you well, mate?
I'm just getting belted by sunlight. It looks like someone's come to take me to heaven. Can you see that?
Sort of angelic.
We always record at this time, but that never happens. So something's happening. It could be the last time you see me, just FYI. Well, I think this don't sweat the small stuff. This could be on the wrong train of thought, Jason. I'm not sure, but it was only 2 weeks ago that in our leadership meeting we talked about the small stuff. Like, we're so focused on the big things, and I'm going to give some specific examples because this is what I come up with. There was no beers in our fridge. And, yep, you know, we're talking about getting people in the office, and you want to be in the office, you want to have a good environment. So, you know, two things that I said that day was I wanted all of the wealth team to pick a day, because they're all coming in, but they're all coming in separately. All pick a day where everyone's in here. Everyone gets in here on that day. So they chose Friday, which is great. And we've had two of those Fridays and it's been awesome. Yeah. And then I said, well, if you're going to be in here on Friday, why is the drinks fridge always empty? Like it should be full. And one of the young guys here, Alex, said, oh, yeah, maybe we need a beer keg. And I said, great idea. Let's just make sure the drink fridge is full. And it's full now and it looks awesome. And then we thought, well, what else could we do? And one of the other guys come up with, you know, breakfast. If we should have breakfast here. So when people, you know, they train, they want to get in early, There's some cereals and stuff here. So it was me actually realizing that, geez, we've been so focused on a lot of big stuff. What about the little things that people really want to come in here and want to enjoy the office for? So that's the example I'll give.
I love that.
So good.
Like when I started work at Seva, shout out for Brent Salay at Seva, learned heaps from him. He was actually someone I should have mentioned in the mentor or leader episode, so we'll throw him back to that one. When I first started working there, it was the little 1% differences. There was always drinks on a Friday night just in the fridge, just there, and somebody had to go to a conscious effort to make sure that 1% was fulfilled. And there was always an abundance of cereal and toasts and spreads just available so that if people got in early and they wanted to make some breakfast to – you know, crack into their emails or start to make some calls for the day. That little extra perk made a difference to people who could get to work early, catch the train in, whatever it was. So, you know, so start to look at this is the lesson out there that I take away and always love to share, you know, when you go to these events to drill home the message. But if you start to make small, better decisions, often these compounding decisions lead to huge success over time, but it's being obsessed with the small things day to day. One of the things he said was things that are easy to do are also easy not to do.
Oh, such a good line.
Yeah, correct. And this is, you know, in the accounting industry, this is one that came to my mind, timesheets. In the accounting land, we harp on about timesheets. You've got to enter your time to a job so you pick up how much work you did for a client and blah, like, and they're easy to do. They're actually not that hard to do. Like, you've got the tab open on your browser. You just got to enter in what you're doing to a job and click submit and you save your time. But the thing is, it's also easy not to do it. It's easy not to do it and go, I'll do it at the end of the day. And then, I didn't get time today. It's after 5 p.m. now. I want to go home. I'll do it at the end of the week. And that thing came to me that some of our most successful team members and our best billers and other people in the industry that I speak to, the ones that do their timesheets and the small 1%ers are the most successful employees. They're the ones that are going out of their way to make the small things to make big differences. Now, Stephen said he learned a lot of this from a book called Slight Edge, which is turning simple disciplines into massive success and happiness. So I've now added that book to my list, The Slight Edge. You know, and the flow on from this became around how, as I said before, failure is feedback. Now, he had some examples of, you know, double your failure rate to be successful. So start to experiment on things and be okay with not getting it right. But what you do is learn from it. You know, the old, you know, threw out that J.K. Rowling's 13th book was Harry Potter. But if she'd quit after the 10th book that didn't work, we wouldn't have Harry Potter in this world. And that would be a damn shame because I love Harry Potter. I'm one of those big Harry Potter nerds out there. They talked about, you know, Jeff Bezos, you know, Amazon's AWS. He talks about 8 or so different failed businesses that cost him billions before he hit the success of AWS, which I think is going to make like $90 billion profit or something, you know, in the next year. So, you know, these 1%ers, you're sweating the small stuff, but also being okay to fail as you experiment and try new things. That's some of the things, like I sat there going, you know what? Like, what are the small things that I haven't given attention to that could be making a huge impact over a long period of time? So that, I think, was a massive one. And, you know, when you sweat the small stuff, you know, the examples that throw always kind of make you, you know, blow your mind as well when it comes to that. And you mentioned Stephen was involved in Dragon's Den. He talked about, you know, the ability to create something. You know, what you want to do is you don't need 100% of an audience to love your product. You don't even need 80% to love your product. But if you can get a small defined audience to love your product and love what you do, that's how you end up with a great brand and, you know, successful. So you got to take risks. You got to take risks and put yourself out there and not be afraid to piss people off.
Yeah, Charlie Munger used to say, the great investor who passed away recently, you only have to be a little bit better for longer and you can achieve amazing things. And that it always resonates with me, that slight edge. I'll definitely be reading that. And I think we need to challenge ourselves sometimes even in our own industries, because they're very traditional industries as to what we could be doing better. How we could be approaching it in unique ways. Doesn't mean we change the core business, but it just means we have some lens on what's coming, you know. And I think these guys, you know, they think much broader. and high level. So yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, and the next part of that, which is a logical bit to cover here, is, you know, what happens when you stop taking risks, or what happens when you try and play it too safe? You know, so big part of the flow on from here was about taking risks and leaning in. So if you lean in, what does that mean? And he started off with the example, and he played the clip, which, man, blew my mind. It was the CEO of Microsoft at the time, the day the iPhone was launched. And the CEO laughed, like, you know, the Microsoft CEO laughed this like obnoxious laugh, going, why would we be worried about the iPhone? It doesn't even have a keyboard. Like, people want to be able to send emails, like, oh, as if a $500 iPhone is going to be better than our $99 Motorola that's powered by Microsoft. And he laughed like this obnoxious laugh. And we know now that basically Microsoft as an operating platform for mobile phones no longer exists, and iPhone went on to become, you know, arguably the best phone created in the world to date. So when he talks about these examples, he then shared a real life example, which, you know, I think we've covered NFTs before, so I think you guys will love this. You know, again, this idea of experimenting and failing. You know, he brings up a picture of an NFT, and it's one of the monkeys, and he's got the receipt transaction for it. He spent $250,000 to buy one of those monkey NFT pictures. And he talks about, you know, failing's fun. You should give it a go. You know, it's great. And in a bit of a tongue-in-cheek way, and he's going, you know, I failed and it cost me over $200,000 because this NFT is now worthless. And it was because of this desire to always be hungry to learn and try new things and experiment to make sure that he knew what technology was out there and what things were coming. Now, for some people, you know, you look at that failure and go, you know, geez, that's a decent loss. And he goes, well, do you know what he did to turn that around? He, through this learnings, he went, well, there's got to be something in this. There's enough people making noise around crypto and blockchain and NFTs. So he went on and learnt the underlying technologies to why these things were now possible. Through that, he's now started a Web3 blockchain business, which was recently valued at $300 million. So his lesson there was that he lost $200,000 buying an NFT, but it fueled the desire to learn about a different technology that he didn't have a knowledge of, and he was able to create a web app business now worth $300 million. So the underlying message there was around, you know, if you're in a particular industry and you think that, you know, change isn't really going to affect you, there was people that were selling horses back in the day before cars came along. And he says, you know, the first car came out and the question was, well, is that car better than a horse? And no, at the time it wasn't. The car broke down. They were slow. They were expensive. So horses were still a better option. So the horse people went, let's just get faster horses. We'll be better than cars. But eventually we all know what happened to cars. They got better and better and better. So, you know, those kind of lessons, you know, sometimes you got to stop and go to these events where you hear speakers talk about these kind of things to get you a little bit kind of, you know, fired up or inspired to re-review your situation, your industry, and go, well, are we experimenting? Are we failing and deliberately to learn new things as we test our product and want to, you know, push forward? Anything resonating with you guys there?
I'm just thinking about our audience going out and dropping $250,000 on a monkey. So just you know, work within your own parameters.
It's all got to be relative.
It might be $1,000.
It's got to be relative. I would suggest not even that. If he's got, yeah, I'd hate to think what he's worth. But, you know, look, it resonates with me, Jace. Like, we've been told, we maybe shouldn't diversify to the point that we do. We've got a few different revenue streams and we've been challenged a few times on that, you know, focus on what you do well. So that's something that I think, we've had a crack at some different revenue streams. Most have worked, some haven't. So yeah, it's all part of learning, right? Geez, life gets pretty boring if you're not trying new things. Like,
yeah. And I think about, I've always tried to not extend to that degree, but like I think about in 2007 doing webinars when I was doing accountability training in the US, and it was like, yeah, it was a new thing. And I'm thinking, I wonder where this is going to play its part. And then all of a sudden, you know, COVID hits and you're on Zoom calls. It's the same with podcasting.
Yeah.
Started the Marty Vidge Show in 2016. People are going, what the hell are you doing? But I was doing it outside of just what the core things I did because it was interesting to me and, you know, I was inspired by the likes of Tim Ferriss and, you know, other podcasters, James Altucher at the time. And I just wanted to do something uniquely creative. Now, little did I think it was going to end up in the Numbers Game podcast at the time, but when we got to this point, I had a foundation of understanding what podcasting is. So I wasn't afraid of doing it. I was actually looking forward to it because of the previous experiences. And same thing in starting a business, you know, same thing. People go, why would you leave the bank? Well, I think it's a better concept here and there's always risk in that, but... And you can plan it out to a certain degree, but unless you actually get out there and do it, you're not going to learn anything. And, you know, I hope the next 52 years I continue to do that. Again, I think I'm probably still conservative in the way I operate. Like I'll still keep 90% of the core stuff I do as the core stuff I do, but I will go and test the 10% just to see what's out there. And I think that comes from comedy. You get like a core set of jokes you know that work, but you always got to throw in the newie to see how the audience responds to it and seeing whether it's actually viable for the future. And I think that methodology purely comes out of doing stand-up when I was younger. But I think it's healthy. I think it's healthy, but I'm not the other way around where I'll keep 10% of the core stuff and put 90% on the line. So I guess you got to assess your own risk factors, but you do need to grow, you know, as a person. So I resonate with it.
And rounding it out the other side of the mountain as you go down, you know, one thing you talked about, you know, and we've spoken a few times on the show before and something that I'm really interested in is AI and how AI is going to shape a bit of the future. And he, Stephen, went into the fact that, you know, if AI is going to become part of what makes some business or some industries redundant, or he's like, well, bugger it, I'm going to be part of it. I'm going to build stuff in AI that is going to help to do that. And, you know, he actually talks about, you know, seeing AI and humans as the two biggest things we need to invest in. You know, we develop AI, but we also need to make sure humans are evolving and developing as we go. And what he's actually built or building at the moment is an AI tool that creates podcasts, like, and not as in creates a podcast for the three of us to sit here and do. It is AI from start to finish. AI producer, AI music, AI voice, and making the whole content from start to finish. And mind-blowingly, he puts up on the screen a Manchester United podcast, and it was, you know, it's called MUFC Daily Podcast. It's real. It's online. I think in Britain, in the UK, you can actually listen to it. And it's an AI-generated daily podcast of the latest news stories about Manchester United. He's a huge Man U fan. And, you know, through creating this content and sharing it out to an audience, they found in version one, 40% of the audience that listened actually got to the end of the episode. They were fine to listen to it. It sounded like a normal human. Then they tested it, tweaked it, kept on going. Then they produced an F1 podcast and 61% of the people who listened to that podcast got to the end of the episode. And then again, kept learning, kept refining. They've done one about the presidential election and nearly 70% of the people that listened to those episodes made it to the end. And he goes, that's the same numbers that they're getting for Diary of a CEO, which is humans talking to each other on a podcast. They've produced AI content, which is not a real person talking, but people are still consuming the content as if it was real. So he kind of said that, you know, he might as well be part of the thing that's going to disrupt or change his industry and he's going to be part of it.
Jeez, it's the pots and pans, isn't it? Like, again, the numbers game, you know, sell the pots and pans, don't worry about finding the gold. It's like, again, you got to get into the logistics of the processes to, like, again, we could... Yeah, the numbers game could be AI produced, but that part of me gets really sad with that too because I go, you know, it's like you enjoy being creative, but I get it. I get it.
We can still talk, Marty.
Yeah, we can still talk. Can we talk in the office just holding a mic?
Yeah.
And, you know, headphones on?
We don't need people to listen.
And I don't know if you guys got your phones in front of you, but I sent you a picture, which is how we're going to wrap this one up today. You know, and for those playing at home, I'll explain what it is. But if you guys can find your age along the top of the graph, this is the big grand finale or part of it, I won't give the whole thing away, talks about prioritizing time. Now, we know that time is a finite resource and we need to prioritize our time and spend it on the right stuff. But it wasn't until you could actually see how many days you've got left on average based on the average life expectancy of the average person. You know, so I'm looking at a graph that I've just sent Nick and Marty. And let's say Marty's just had his 52nd birthday, so I'm going to round it down a little bit. So Marty has lived for nearly, call it 19,000 days. And on average, with the average life expectancy, Marty's got maybe somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 days left. Now, when you say it like that, that you've consumed or allocated, you know, a fair amount of time based on life expectancy. And when you put in a number of days and said there's 9,000 days left, it doesn't sound like enough, right?
Yeah, I'm just going to go and grab a beer. I'm just going to take up drinking again.
No, you're going the wrong way. No. But yeah, no, so I found that really interesting to have a visual representation of the number of days left, you know, how you're going to spend your life. And I think the message there was in business and life, you know, whether you're working a job every day and you rock up or you're running a business, you actually really need to appreciate and love the life that you're in. And if you're doing something you don't like, the message I believe is, you know, you got to look to make some changes to use the leftover allocation of time you've got, allocate it to doing things that you love with people that you want to be around. You know, I think if you Google it, Jelly Bean time allocation video, there's a really good visual representation that he shared of, you know, they pour out the however many jelly beans it was, let's go with 30,000 jelly beans. That's the amount of days you might live. And what they do is they sweep the jelly beans off as you go. And so you spend this many days showering or in the toilet. You spend this many days preparing food. You spend this many days at work. And ultimately it dwindles down until you've got a relatively small pile of jelly beans left over. And then ask the question, what are you going to do with those jelly beans if you get to allocate them one by one?
Jason, I know we're wrapping up, but I just go, when I was 35 years of age to 52, right, this gives you some perspective, and I was talking to Nick about this the other day, like everyone in my family was alive. Now, all grandparents and everything, within 17 years, virtually other than Dad, who's just hanging on, are all gone. And a lot of the times we say in the family, geez, wouldn't I love to have just one more cup of coffee with them? Wouldn't it be great? So to the people that are 35 and 25, go and have that cup of coffee or go and have that drink with a loved one, because time passes very quickly and you would give anything to have a day with them again. And I go, have that day while you can and enjoy your days. Absolutely.
Yeah. And one thing I've always said is you think you've got more time and then it's gone. So, you know, really think about how you use that time. And, you know, if you are using some of your time to listen to the Numbers Game, we do appreciate it. We hope you are getting valuable, you know, bits of lessons and information from, you know, what Nick, Marty and I share. We know that spending our time here, we believe, provides value to people out there that, you know, want to get some education and want to learn new things. And, you know, we love what we do and we appreciate you guys joining us. So until next time, please follow, like, subscribe, share this episode with a friend who may need to hear about the time allocation they've got left or how the small stuff can help them have a better life and business. But until next time,
time is everything. Spend it wisely. Game over.